Maggie held her head up and kept her eyes dry. She was learning. It didn't matter what anyone else thought. It didn't. It didn't. The other girls avoided her, half because they were frightened of Bob and Jack, half because the word had got around their parents, and they had been instructed to keep away. Being thick with the Clearys usually meant trouble of some kind. So Maggie passed the last few days of school in Coventry, as they called it, which meant she was totally ostracized. Even Sister Agatha respected the new policy and took her rages out on Stuart instead. As were all birthdays among the little ones if they fell on a school day, Maggie's birthday celebration was delayed until Saturday, when she received the longed-for willow-pattern tea set. It was arranged on a beautifully crafted ultramarine table and chairs made in Frank's non-existent spare time, and Agnes was seated on one of the two tiny chairs, wearing a new blue dress made in Fee's non-existent spare time. Maggie stared dismally at the blue and white designs gambolling all around each small piece, at the fantastic trees with their funny puffy blossoms, at the ornate little pagoda, at the strangely still pair of birds, and the minute figures eternally fleeing across the kinky bridge. It had lost every bit of its enchantment. But dimly she understood why the family had beggared itself to get her the thing they thought dearest to her heart. So she dutifully made tea for Agnes in the tiny square teapot, and went through the ritual as if in ecstasy. And she continued doggedly to use it for years, never breaking or so much as chipping a single piece. No one ever dreamed that she loathed the willow pattern tea set, the blue table and chairs, and Agnes's blue dress. 2 days before that Christmas of 1917, Patty brought home his weekly newspaper and a new stack of books from the library. However, the paper for once took precedence over the books. Its editors had conceived a novel idea based on the fancy American magazines, which very occasionally found their way to New Zealand. The entire middle section was a feature on the war. There were blurred photographs of the Anzacs storming the pitiless cliffs at Gallipoli, long articles extolling the bravery of the Antipodean soldier, features on all the Australian and New Zealand winners of the Victoria Cross since its inception, and a magnificent full-page etching of an Australian light horse cavalryman mounted on his charger, saber at the ready, and long silky feathers pluming from under the turned-up side of his slouch hat.